Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of Bannering the Blue Shirts. I'm Tom Rich Jr. and as always, I'm joined by Mike Murphy. Mike, how are you doing on this cold and rainy Thursday?
Well, it's weird. We both knew it wasn't going to be a crazy deadline for the Rangers. Like, I think a lot of people are like, maybe Jack Eichel? And then of course, now we know Jack Eichel has like a herniated disc or something, and he's done for the year. But it was goddamn boring, Tom. The trade deadline for the Rangers, like, it sounded like for a little bit the Rangers might be in play as, like, taking on some cap and, you know, serving as a middleman for, you know, like a three-team deal and getting compensation for something. But nothing goddamn happened, Tom. The only real trade leading up to the deadline the Rangers had was parting ways with Brendan Lemieux, and I think it would be a stretch to call that really a deadline trade. So, you know, that happened. And a couple of friends of mine and I are doing a women's hockey analytics conference that we announced. So that's fun. And now that's one more thing for me to lose sleep over and plan. But it'll be a fun thing we get to do in July. It'll be virtual and figuring out how to do that. I've never done a conference before, so time for me to learn. Thankfully, my friend Alyssa Longmire has done one, so I'm just going to pick her brain, and she's doing this one with us. So, but yeah, other than that, hanging in there. Deadline was boring, and I'm eating Chinese food tonight, so not a bad week, other than, like you said, it's been a couple of pissy rainy days lately.
Yeah, as far as the deadline goes, it's pretty much the moves that the Rangers did not make. We saw, obviously, there was rumors that they could be involved with Caps transaction trades, like you mentioned. We saw that with the David Savard trade, where you had, you know, intermediaries helping to, you know, move him to ultimately to Tampa. And then there was the reports, which we saw from Larry Brooks and we saw from Darren Dreger and Elliot Friedman, you know, surrounding Tony DeAngelo, how the Rangers have been pretty much prepared to buy him out this summer, and his representation came to the Rangers with a proposal of, hey, you know, we can do, you know, mutual termination of contract, which pretty much is, you know, exactly what it sounds like. Rangers don't owe Tony anything. Tony's free to go, and then he would go through waivers before that, and obviously he wouldn't get claimed. And the one team that was out there, and at first was a little bit of information, and then as time's gone on, we've heard a little bit more, although you never know how serious things were, but it was the Montreal Canadiens were one of the more interested teams, and if that route had gone down, it wouldn't have just been a one-year deal. I know Elliot Friedman had mentioned that he heard that it would have been a situation where he signed for the rest of this year and a deal for next year that would have, quote-unquote, made him whole for the money he would have lost out on by the mutual termination. So, obviously, that sort of doesn't happen, and then he says his goodbye in respects on Instagram. You know, he's sort of saying, like, well, we know what's going to happen next, and, you know, thanking fans and all that stuff. And that pretty much wraps that element up until he's officially bought out in the summer. But yeah, quiet deadline for the Rangers in terms of trades. But you could almost say that the Rangers did make deadline acquisitions in the sense of Zach Jones signs an entry-level contract, fresh off winning a national championship with UMass Amherst. Left-handed defenseman and someone who the Rangers took in 2019, and his stock has really soared over the last couple of years. And I know that you have a lot of interesting statistics about Mr. Jones, so I'm going to let you tell the fine people about Zach Jones in more detail.
Yeah, I was really curious about Jones, not only like when the Rangers signed him, but it was a guy I was curious about just because of, you can't help but look at the blue line and the prospects that are here and think about Reinen and what future he might have. Then you think of Jones, you think of Nils Lundqvist, and like it's like kind of a conveyor belt, and you wonder what guys might get knocked off, and what young guys might get a chance to really carve out an opportunity for themselves. Then, of course, Zach Jones signed, and I just finished today writing 1,200 words on him. That'll go up when you're listening to the show. It'll be up on Banter. And the thing about like college hockey data, I've learned a lot of tricks from covering the women's game and finding college hockey data. And thankfully, it also helps with finding the men's hockey data. Like there's some stuff out there. It's not, you don't get the same level, obviously, that you get for publicly available NHL data, but a lot of the data we have is good for mostly like analyzing certain types of players. And one of the things it is kind of good at is offensive defensemen, which is the niche that Jones falls comfortably into. It's really interesting to me that he actually led the Minutemen at UMass Amherst, that he led them in individual Corsi for it, at even strength and on the power play. I was really curious about what kind of impact it would have. He played on a team with I think it's Matt Kessel is his name, and he's a St. Louis Blues prospect. So, and he's another kind of good puck moving defenseman. And so, like when you have two guys who kind of fit that role on a college team, and they're both NHL prospects, it can be kind of tricky when you're trying to like discern what one does that the other doesn't do. But overall, like the big thing to remember here is Jones is 20. He'll be 21 next October. And so he was, I think one of the 50 youngest D in the nation this year that played a minimum of 15 games. And he had really, really encouraging numbers. He led his team in block shots for whatever that's worth for you. But the thing that stood out the most to me was when he was on the ice, a lot of good things happened. For his team, and his like even strength goal differential was through the roof. He was on a very good team, don't get me wrong, so everyone had a good even strength goal differential, but looking at some of the context behind his numbers, you can't help but be like, oh wow, this is a really, impactful player. The thing that is most interesting to me is his college coach, Greg Carvel, like has been really kind of honest about analyzing Jones. And he said, this is a guy that when he came here was something of a defensive liability, and also a liability because he wasn't really strong. And one of the stories you're going to hear a lot of with Zach Jones is he's 5'10" and 170 pounds. So he's on the smaller side for a defenseman. But we need only look at what a 5'10" Adam Fox can do to understand sizes and everything, especially in the modern game. And Carvel has said, like, maybe he's going to be a player who can be like an Adam Fox, which, of course, is high, high praise, and we shouldn't rush to those expectations for him. But it is, he plays the left side, and the Rangers don't necessarily have a lot of guys who have that sort of strictly offensive defenseman skill set that Jones has on the left side, which is really interesting because it might help balance out, the bottom pairing or, the bottom four in the near future. And I don't know, it's interesting that he a lot of the talk about what changed in his game over the past 2 years, Tom, is like, this was a guy who got stronger and got better away from the puck because the offensive stuff was already there. And I think It sounds somewhat similar to things we've heard about Adam Fox, but it's safe to say he's just a tier below Fox in terms of like what his overall abilities are. And that, of course, doesn't mean he can't be a very, very good NHL player one day. I do think it just means we should keep that in mind when we're evaluating a guy who's a 20-year-old defenseman.
Certainly. And like I think it's important what you just said, like in vis-a-vis like Adam Fox, in the sense that like we have a bunch of different prospects that we look at, and when you're talking at least from the Rangers perspective, you know, obviously Nils Lundqvist would probably be at the very tippy top of that, and then, you know, obviously someone like Zach Jones is of importance, and Braden Schneider, and you mentioned Rantanen earlier. But that's fine, because theoretically speaking, there's only so much ice time to go around, but you want to have the right types of prospects. I think ideally having someone who can move the puck, can skate well, can be able to make plays is beneficial. Now, you obviously want to have as good players as you can, and, you know, that's the goal. But even if he's a second pair guy, a third pair guy, you still need good players in your lineup. And, you know, based on what we've seen and how he, you know, projects, you're looking at someone who will help the Rangers. And I think fans understand the types of players that the Rangers have skated over the last few years. And, you know, we've seen a lot of badness. Like, we've seen Lieber Hayek. We've seen Rob O'Gara. It's been ugly at times. So anytime you're able to add someone who's young, who's showing potential, it makes it a world better. And I think how the team has added people, whether it's Trouba and Fox and Miller and Lindgren, you're now having somewhat of an environment, and I kind of feel weird like lumping Miller into that group, like where Miller is a rookie himself this year, Fox is a sophomore, but it's this environment where they're playing so well that you don't have to worry about it too much, that you're talking about adding another young, you know, player to the mix, and it's not this element of, oh, you're really going to need someone to shelter so-and-so, because you pretty much have like a balance.
Yeah, it's a lot different than it was 5 years ago, right? When it felt like there was the token kid, and then there was all these established guys and a couple journeymen and like Nick Holden, you know, like it was a very different looking blue line. And now we have all these prospects coming up through the pipeline. And it's I'm glad you mentioned like Andre Miller and you mentioned Fox, because like you think about the left side and you think about what Ryan Lindgren has become and how good he looks on that pair with Fox. You think about Andre Miller, and then, you know, there's space there for another guy who plays the left side to be there for a while. There's nothing that says that can't be Zach Jones. And I think that's what the Rangers are kind of hoping to find out. And I think there is something to be said about, you know, getting him in the program early, getting him around pros, doing all those things. It'll be very interesting to see if and when he gets drawn into the lineup. I'm curious about the opportunity he has, but really, this signing, more than anything, makes me curious about the fate of Rajoninen. And then, of course, I would love to know what the front office thinks they have with Lieber Hayek.
I agree with that as well, and I think that we heard, you know, Quinn talked, and he said it's going to be a situation where they're in a playoff race, and he's going to have to earn his spot into the lineup, which I understand that, and I'm not going to get up in arms about it, even though the Rangers under David Quinn have been the furthest thing from a meritocracy. But I think there's things to be learned about Zach Jones once he does get into the lineup. Like, I understand the concerns about size, but like, look no further. You have someone like Jared Spurgeon. He's 5'9", 167 pounds. He's coming up on 700 games in the NHL. And you have Torrey Krug, 5'9", 186 pounds, 565, you know, regular season career games. You know, so right there, you have examples of quote unquote undersized players in the league who are pretty productive defensemen. So Jones being 5'10", already taller than them, he's in the middle in terms of weight, but I don't really think that matters that much. What I'm more interested in, and something that we want to find out, which we've kind of already found out about Lieber Hayek, is speed of the game, where Hayek is not fleet of foot. Yeah. It's hard at times to, like, for him to, if he's out of position, to get into the position. So seeing how Jones reads the game, seeing how his puck moving translates, because, like, obviously you're going to have way smarter players who are going to be able to pick off cross-ice passes and things of that nature. So that's more or less what I'm interested to see. And I'm not too concerned about how his body's going to hold up physically. Although I understand, you know, it's something we see with all the players. Like, look at the strides Kako made in terms of fitness. And you look at Hedl, who was also a little bit on the smaller side. But I would say that Hayek is kind of on notice, and if the Rangers do end up dropping a couple of these games coming up because of how tight things are, it puts the math not in their favor, and then yeah. I think you see him draw into the lineup.
Yeah, there's I think a lot of what you said is important. Like, looking at like Karp wrote something about Jones, I think, in around November, or is either November or January, where Drury was already saying, like, they feel confident in his ability to make that first pass out of the zone at the NHL level already, which is a really strong statement to make for, you know, for a kid who's 20. But the speed of the game is something, you know, you talked about, which occurs to me because right now I think it's, you know, it's 17 points in 17 games for Morgan Barron and Hartford, which is really, really promising. He kept a five-game point streak going today in Hartford's win over Bridgeport. He had an assist on an empty net goal. Tim Gettinger scored again. But the thing is, like, the big knock on Morgan Barron is, like, is his speed going to be an issue at the NHL level? Because he's really good at creating chances for himself, but he has a lot of tricks outside of his speed. And someone was asking me on Twitter, is like, you know, can he skate at the NHL level? And I had to be like, I'm not a prospect guy. I'm a guy who watches AHL games when I can, and I look at stats, and then I try to make informed, you know, observations when I write, because there are people who make a living out of doing that, and I'm definitely not that guy. But it's interesting to me to think of what that adjustment looks like for a defenseman who's like 20 going on 21, when you have to adjust to the speed. And, you know, I think a lot of people might say, oh, he's 5'10", he might get fucking killed out there. But I think the bigger thing to adjust to is just the speed of the game. And in many ways, I think you can be exposed in a big way as an offensive defenseman who's used to taking risks and, you know, going for pinches and making these stretch passes where you have to quickly adjust. Like, I remember, I'll never forget how good Adam Fox looked in that Traverse City tournament. You remember when he was just like a man among boys? And then when he got to the NHL level, he still looked good, but you could tell it was like, oh yeah, this is, you know, this is a much bigger pond now. This is a much harder test. And I mean, just look at what he's done this year compared to last year. He was great last year, but this year he's, you know, he's a legitimate Norris candidate. He's that good already. And everyone has a learning curve. I think it'll be really interesting to see what that learning curve will look like for a guy like Zach Jones. But I mean, props to the Rangers for the scouting work on him, because a third-round pick like him, I couldn't help but bring up Cam York in the article I wrote. The Flyers pick 14th overall in 2019. You know, you look at their numbers side by side, and I'll just put it this way. Like, Jones's numbers look pretty good compared to Cam York's, and that's a guy who has taken 14th overall. So that's good work by the Rangers.
The last thing I'll say on Zach Jones, and you bringing it up, you know, talking about, you know, people being worried he's going to get killed out there. So I have a question for you. I want to see how close you are. If I ask you this question, so how big do you think Ryan Lindgren is? And you know the consensus around Ryan Lindgren and the type of player he is. How big do you think Ryan Lindgren is?
He's sub 6 foot, I know that, right? He's 5'11 or something. I don't know what his weight is, but he's not... He's one of those guys who's just a compact little wrecking ball, but he's not a big guy.
So he's 6 foot on the nose and 191 pounds. So, like, just think of that. So 2-inch difference.
Not quite Hal Gill, yeah.
Right, exactly. So, and it's interesting to me because, like, when most people think of, like, who is the freight train on the Rangers, like, you think of Jacob Chuba, because, like, obviously, you know, he's a thick boy, and he lays the boom with, you know, whatever he wants to, and doing it clean mostly, which is something that it's harder and harder in this league, it seems. But then it's like Ryan Lindgren, obviously he gets the kudos for that game against Washington where he drops Alex Ovechkin, although it did wake him up and allow him to score 2 goals, if that's, you know, the what you want to believe. But like,
I still take it. It was fucking awesome.
Oh yeah, exactly. But
it was awesome to see a guy like Lindgren get chirped in that game, and all the spiciness of that game. Everyone was like, what the hell, you don't hit Ovi? It's like, I don't give a shit. I'm Ryan Lindgren. I'm going to hit who I want.
Right, exactly.
It was a clean hit, too, so I'm all
yeah.
for it.
So if you figure Zach Jones, he's still a work in progress, only 20. Maybe he grows another inch. Maybe he puts on 10 to 15 pounds of muscle. It's, you know... Then he's pretty much Ryan Lindgren's size. And the only reason I point this out is it's, you know, it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things because their games couldn't be any more different in nature. But just to sort of dispel that idea of, man, he's really small and he's going to get crushed out there. I mean, you know, there was another guy for the Rangers that was pretty small. You know, his name was Matt Zuccarello, and that really didn't stop him from, you know, doing things either. So if you have skill and you're an offensive player and you're able to move the puck and you're able to skate, and you know, you don't really have to worry that much about getting hit. So I think that in the long run, Zach Jones is going to be fine. And like I said, it's more so, okay, he's coming off a massive high playing NCAA hockey, winning a national championship. What's that speed transition like? Because it does take some time, you know, as we've seen with other players.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's funny. I mean, we could either transition to talking about, you know, we're talking about adjusting to the NHL game, and a guy who we've watched now for 6 games, I was telling you before the show, I can't believe it's 6 games, because it doesn't feel like it's 6 games already, but Kravtsov. What are your thoughts, Tom, after 6 games of Vitali Kravtsov?
So, I will give you my thoughts on Vitali Kravtsov right after this ad break.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Just like that, we're back from the break. Vitaly Kravtsov has been very impressive thus far, and it's a thing where I know people are obsessing over, okay, he has one assist, he probably could have two, you know, they took one away. I think it was like a drop pass that I think the angle was like, it looked like he deflected it a little bit, and another angle looked like he just let the puck go by. But I really don't care about that. He's been very impressive in how he's approached his game thus far, and it's the little one-on-one plays that we've seen with him, similar to Kaapo Kakko, where he'll have the puck on his forehand and he'll be going to one side, and then he will sort of stop, put it in reverse, and go in the opposite direction and sort of stick out to shield the puck. It's just this... I always describe it as like Jaromir Jagr, just because I associate that type of behavior with him, where it's like, okay, I want to do this thing, I'm going to go this direction. You know what? I can't go this way. I'm going to turn. I'm going to shield the puck. I'm going to go in the opposite direction and try and make a play. And then sometimes, like, well, I can't go this way now, so then I'm going to reverse it again. And it's just almost this, you're trying to tire the opposition out. And then there were even a couple of plays against the last game against New Jersey where he's has the puck along the boards, or he's working along the boards, and you have Devils trying to hit him or get the puck, and they're just bouncing off of him, and he's staying on his skates and he keeps on moving. And it's just impressive. Like you said, it's been six games, and in those six games with the team, he leads them in Corsi 4 percentage. Like, obviously very small sample size, but 53.78, which is really good. You know, expected goals for, he's sub 50, but he's still fifth on the team in that span. So in terms of how the Rangers have played lately, you've had ups and downs, you know, shielded by really good goaltending from Igor Shesterkin, who picked up his first shutout, which was really cool to see. But Kravtsov has been really impressive to watch, and it's those instincts and it's that willingness to get in the dirty areas of the ice, which let you know that once he has a little more confidence, once he's in a line with people for a little bit and he's able to settle in, the points are going to come. And like, that was one of the more impressive things, like, you know, like when Alex was sort of recapping his season, he had, I think he posted it going back, he had like a chart of where his goals were scored and stuff, and it wasn't all of these long range, you know, goals. Like, it was around the net, whether it was tip-ins or whether it was him coming in. So that type of style is going to benefit him at the NHL level, and it's really cool to see, because obviously we know everything. He came over and things didn't go well in Hartford, and he went back to the KHL, and you know, everything associated with that to get to this point where he's looking so comfortable and so strong six games in. You see a legitimate NHL player in there, and someone who could make a real good difference for this team.
Yeah, the thing that my first impression from him is, like, I was excited to see Laff, I was excited to see Kaapo Kakko, and, like, watching them after a couple of games, you're just like, oh, yeah, I see what, you know, you see little flashes of things. And after everything that had gone on with Kravtsov, you couldn't help but be like, oh, I just hope this works, please work. And really, he's just fun. He's fun to watch when he has the puck. He's a slippery player. He reminds me at times a little bit of Booch. And then at times, like, there are little flashes of him being a very, like, much more elusive player than Booch. But, you know, to use old-time hockey terms, he's very east-west guy, right, Tom? And what's so fun about him, I think, from getting to watch him, you know, like you said, six-game sample size isn't much to go by, but his, you know, underlying numbers have been really fun. And, yeah, it's one assist, but, like, Lafreniere looks great with Kravtsov. That, the kid, it's so fun watching that line, and, like, everyone is kind of buzzing about just the way he looks and what the eye test is telling us, and to find even, like, little little motes of evidence in terms of the underlying numbers to say, like, is he really as good as he looks? And I think, you know, like you said, this is an NHL player. He's arrived. He's ready. And, you know, now with Kravtsov, we get to enjoy the same headache we get to enjoy for all these other kids, which is finding him ice time. Because, you know, through six games, he's averaging 12 minutes and 18 seconds. And, you know, it's not a lot. It's not a lot of time to make your mark, even if you're not playing against, like, the top pair and the other team's top players. So you would expect him to be able to show his skill, but you know, it's a unique problem the Rangers have, where they're this super young team, but you also have these guys that you just... It's hard to take ice time away from some of these guys. Like, how do you take ice time away from Panarin? How do you take ice time away from Chris Kreider? How do you take ice time away from Pavel Buchnevich this year, for goodness sakes? And, you know, and of course, you know, you have the case of Ryan Strome and Filip Hedl, but then, you know, admittedly, I think there are some games where Filip Hedl doesn't always look like he's fully engaged or he's completely ready for a bigger role yet. I still think all signs point to him being there and that it's going to happen and that it might happen sooner if he gets more ice time. But it's an interesting dilemma. Now we get to enjoy wondering about Kravtsov getting opportunity, right?
I think there is the opportunity for him to get an opportunity, not to use the same word twice, but Chris Kreider has been pretty bad lately. He's gone 8 games without a goal,
yeah.
Only 15 shots in that span. And
he's even arguing with Mika. What the hell's going on?
Yeah, it's and like if you extend it to like 11 games, so he has 1 goal in his last 11 games, which is not great. And I don't know. And like, I don't want to take a sample, like a small sample size out of context or try to make something bigger than it is, because, you know, on the whole, you know, 17 goals in 42 games, you know, that shooting percentage is 20.2, which is, you know, 7.6 higher than his career, or 6.8 higher than his career average. I did wrong math there. But like, this was one of the concerns with signing a guy to a long-term contract, that the nature of Chris Kreider was he is a roughly a 45 to 50 point player. And he's going to have these highs and lows. And the problem becomes when you have talent on the wing. You have your Panarin, Kako, Lafreniere, you know, Buchnevich, Kravtsov. You don't have enough top six spots. And they can make this work for a little while, because you're going to have a time where you have all of these guys on entry-level deals. So if Kreider ends up being on your third line, it's not ideal, but it's not going to really blow up your books. So in the interim, though, like the KZB line has been pretty stale. I know Rob Luker has posted a lot of things on, you know, his Twitter feed, and, you know, showing how the Rangers have pretty much changed everything except that line and the first power play unit. So that's where I would look to get Kravtsov ice time. I think the interesting thing was the coaching staff said they're comfortable and he's comfortable playing on either left or right. So theoretically, he could slide into Kreider's spot, and you're not taking away from Panarin, you're not taking away from Buchnevich, and you're not taking away from Kako. I think this is something the Rangers are going to have to address long term. Like I said, it's a small sample size, and I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but it's something to think about and managing expectations. And obviously, we've seen other players in their mid to late 30s who have been able to become more productive. Like, I think of like Joe Pavelski, where, you know, people thought you know, he was on a downswing and he was able to be productive. So like, I'm not writing off Chris Kreider, who's going to turn 30, you know, 15 days from now, but like, that is your immediate, oh, where do we put Kravtsov? But for whatever reason, David Quinn wants to keep that line together. Maybe we see that change, like I said earlier, when the playoff picture becomes, a little more unrealistic.
I agree. I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, we all love Chris Kreider. That goes without saying. But when you look at the other guys who are there and, like, getting the opportunities, like, you're not going to take ice time away from Artemi Panarin. You're not going to take ice time away from Mika Zibanejad. You're not going to take ice time away from Booch. And then you want to find ice time for kids, so you're trying to find ice time for a guy like Kaapo Kakko. You're not necessarily bending over backward to find ice time for Colin Blackwell. You know what I mean? It's obvious what is kind of the good medicine to pursue here is finding opportunities for the kids. And it comes to mind a lot on the power play. But then you also think of, like, how valuable is Chris Kreider as a net front presence on the power play? And, you know, you can kind of go dizzy thinking about how to move these pieces around to find, you know, opportunities for kids. And of course the Rangers are so dependent on that top power play unit, but I mean to say they lean on it a lot, you know what I mean? But yeah, I'm ready for, like, let the kids do the kids. Kreider getting closer to third line minutes is not a bad thing if it means, you know, for a couple games we get to see a different look and someone get an opportunity with, you know, a more capable center every once in a while. I think it's not a bad thing. And I do think, you know, the KBZ is a line I think we all loved. And, you know, when the Rangers were not quite as fun to watch as they are right now, that was a line that was typically kind of doing the heavy lifting. And now, like you said, it's a little stale right now, and that's fine. And I think the part of it that's stale right now is Chris Kreider. That doesn't mean Chris Kreider's falling apart or anything like that. But, you know, think about the conversation we were having a couple months ago with how rough, you know, things were for Mika Zibanejad. Chris Kreider was, you know, having a really strong start and everything else. But like you said, he's, you know, we all know what Chris Kreider is. He's a guy who we should pay very close attention to in terms of when he, you know, loses half a step and what his game looks like. But, you know, generally speaking, this is all fun stuff to think about because it's figuring out where guys fit in, and it ties into what we were talking about with Jones. And of course, with this Kravtsov and everything else, is these kids are more and more, they're like meeting expectations and they're showing their potential. And the Rangers right now are a couple games above 500, and technically they're not out of the playoff race, which is just, you know, fun. I don't think they're going to make it, but it also helps that I think they're level with the Flyers right now in points. But it's kind of a wacky time because the Rangers did the right thing in not making any deals to do anything ridiculous, like, you know, try to take a swing at the playoffs with this team, because that wouldn't have been the right thing to do. And sticking with these, you know, giving kids opportunity nice time, that's the right thing to do right now.
As it currently stands, they've played 42 games. They have 46 points. The Boston Bruins have 50 points in 40 games. You know, we mentioned, you know, the New Jersey Devils, we're recording this, you know, it's about half an hour before a puck drop, against, the Devils at Madison Square Garden. And then after that, they're going to have two more games versus the Devils. I think that it's going to be an interesting stretch because obviously Boston still has a couple more games against Buffalo, which theoretically should be free points, and Boston just picked up Taylor Hall from the Buffalo Sabres, so that's another interesting storyline to look at. But it's quite amazing to me. Like, I look at the standings, and if you sort by the division by goal differential, the Penguins, who are in third, they lead with a plus 28. The Islanders, who are in second, a plus 27. The Capitals, who are in first, a plus 25. And then you have the Rangers at a plus 24, 136 goals for, 112 against. And then you have the Bruins, who have scored 112 goals, only allowed 106. And then obviously Philadelphia, New Jersey, and Buffalo are all negative. And I bring this up because it kind of points to how close this team is, and how, with some tweaks, where you figure, okay, you're not playing Brett Howden, you're not playing Lieber Hayek, you're having a little more consistency from your backup goaltender. It's really exciting, and I know Mika, a hockey stat miner, points this out a lot, that like going into this offseason, the Rangers have a lot of cap space that they can use in the interim to make things a little more interesting, and before they have to pay some of their kids. And you might be in a situation, because of how the development has been a little more slower than expected, where you might not have those massive salaries off of the ALC. The one exception I would say is obviously Adam Fox, who's leading the league in leading defense in scoring, and then obviously Shesterkin. Although I could see them following the Lundqvist path, where you do the deal in between the deal before doing the long term extension. Although I would just pay the man, lock him up, because you know I don't really think the clock is ticking on him. We kind of know what he's going to be.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. I think you found. I think normally finding the person to follow in Lundqvist's footsteps should have been a nightmare, right? It should have been very hard to do. This is not a bad solution with Shesterkin. I have no issues with locking him up, because he already looks like he can be, for a while, one of the top 12, 10 goalies in the league. And maybe more than that, but I think it's safe and reasonable to say he will be in the top third for a while if he continues to be this good. And that's, great goaltending is all you can ask for. Above average goaltending can win Stanley Cups, and I think he's projected and playing often like he's better than an above average goaltender. Lock him up.
So I didn't put this on our doc, but we were talking about Shesterkin, and I have a question for you. So I'm pretty sure I know what your answer is going to be, but I'm just curious. So do you think, and obviously some of this is dependent on how these final games go, but do you think that when all's said and done after this season, that Shesterkin is going to finish in the top three for the Calder? Or do you think that he didn't play enough, or there's just going to be the focus on like Kirill Kaprizov and some of the other rookies who got headlines for the majority of the season?
I think it hurts his case that there are a couple other goalies that have stepped into significant roles around the league, and also the fact that he got hurt. I also think the odds are kind of stacked against you anyway if you're a rookie goalie to win the Calder. I mean, who's the last guy to do it?
Steve Mason, I think.
Is it Steve Mason? Yeah, it's been a while. I think it goes without saying he's one of the best rookies in the league this year, but I mean, there was a graphic on a recent game or an NHL Network where I saw, I think he was fifth among rookie goalies in wins, and of course you shouldn't evaluate goalies by wins or their record or goals against average necessarily, but voters will. And it was interesting to me because it's like, ah, shit. He's not gonna get enough credit, and that's a bummer. But it's also, just kind of reality. This isn't a new story to the Rangers, with what happened with Fox last year, but, Vanecek has been, he's like a .913 save percentage. He has 17 wins for Washington. He's a rookie. Kevin Lankinen, who the hell thought that was going to happen in Chicago? Kaapo Kähkönen in Minnesota. And then Igor has really, really, really good numbers. He has a .924 save, and he finally got that first shutout, which is great. But he's missed time with injury, and he has a record of 11-9-3. Just the reality of being on a kind of a middling team in the league right now. It's a little different than playing for the Washington Capitals. So then, of course, you have the whole, oh yeah, there's Kaprizov, who's, he's like a grown man playing among rookies, so he looks absolutely unfucking believable. I don't know how many votes Igor is going to get. I think a lot depends on what happens with this final stretch here, and And what's interesting is the Rangers probably lost some confidence that they may have had in Georgie, and that may actually help Igor's case. And I'm sure to some extent, you know, if he's fully healthy and they're confident in his recovery and everything, you know, ride him, figure out what you have. Why not, you know, go with him like he's the bona fide workhorse starter that he looks like. It's fun. Very fun. It would be nice, Tom, if Rangers get awards. I want that world. I just don't expect it. You'd think there'd be a little bit of bias that works in their favor with being a fucking New York team, but it doesn't ever seem to be the case. So, what do we know?
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think like it's going to come down to like Kaprizov, who's had a really good season, and Jason Robertson of the Dallas Stars has really come on as well. 29 points in 36 games. He's been pretty hot for them lately, scoring a bunch of goals. Cool to see, you know, that for the Stars, a team that went to the Cup final obviously last season. Things didn't get underway the way they wanted to, but he's been a really bright spot for them. And then the last little note here, like I said, you know, we're pushing up against like pregame and, you know, start of the game, and I'm going to try and edit this and schedule this before the game starts. Artemi Panarin played in his 100th game as a New York Ranger against the Devils and scored a goal. And it was his 138th point, which is the highest, you know, point total for a Ranger in their first 100 games.
Seems pretty good.
Yep, Mark Messier had 137 points, so he was able
fucking scrub.
Yeah, to surpass him. And it's interesting when you look at it in terms of free agent signings. So Hockey Stat Miner once again had a chart. So you have Panarin at number one in 138 points in 100 games. Then it goes Ulf Nilsson, 118 points. A fellow by the name of Wayne Gretzky, 117 points in 100 games.
Yeah.
Marian Gaborik, who doesn't get enough love as a Ranger, I think, 107 points, including 52 goals in 100 games. Michael Nylander, 104. Anders Henberg, 103. Pierre Larouche, 103. And then
where was Pat Verbeek on that?
So the last name
he
on
was surprising to me.
So the last
he was up there.
Name on his list, and I'm wondering if he just cut it off, was Mark Pavlich, 96 points in 100 games. So you had a lot of interesting names here, but like 138 points in 100 games, that's really special. And you figure how weird these seasons were, where you had last year obviously stopped and this year delayed. So impressive for Artemi Panarin. It's hard to find words to describe how impressive he is and what he means to this team offensively. And good for him.
Pat Verbeek, Tom, 88 games as a Ranger, 97 points.
Wow. That's impressive.
Pat Verbeek. Yeah.
Do you know what seasons those were?
94, 95, and 95, 96. And he was 30 and 31.
So he just missed out on the Cup year.
Yeah, he was there after the Cup year, yeah. He was a Hartford Whaler and then a New York Ranger. Before at Hartford, he was a longtime Devil. And then after the Rangers, he was with the Stars, the Red Wings, then finished his career with Dallas at the age of 37 in 2001-2002. Pat Verbeek. Remember him because he had the Yofa helmet with the visor for a long time. We need more fun helmets. I understand we probably came a long way with sports science to protect brains, but I want more unique, goofy helmets. Like, I was watching Nick Foligno talking to, you know, Leafs media, and they were like, "Oh, remember when your dad was here and he wore that goofy fucking helmet?" Because his dad wore like a soup bowl of a helmet. And Foligno was like, "Yeah, it was fun. It was really comfortable. It's the most comfortable helmet I wore, but you look like a total goof." But I miss the days of weird, wacky helmets. Like, I don't think we need Butch Goring helmets, but I want different ones. They all look too space age. I want goofy.
Yeah, you could even do that and even see like some of the like Artis Erbe style goalie masks.
Yeah,
and
you don't see any more what are they called, like birdcage masks for goalies. Everyone, like the days of the cat eye helmet are gone. It's no fun anymore, Tom. I want fun. I say we bring in that European League thing where if you're the leading scorer, you have a golden fucking helmet. It's great.
The Lauri Paajanniemi helmet.
Yeah. A glittery gold. I like it. So people know if they're watching that guy and they're gambling on him. Why not? Why not? Anyway, there's a game on soon.
Yeah. Anything else you wanted to say?
Rangers are going to win 17-2.
That's a good prediction. I think the Rangers will win. I'm not bold enough to name a score.
17-2.
All right, we'll go with 17-2. As always, we thank everyone for listening. Especially thankful for all our Patreon supporters. Adam Clendenning, Adam Nahoic, Aiden Gaspar, Amriel Kistner, Andrei Shikagov, Andy White, Bjarner Osterheim, Captain America, Chris Marco Trigiano, Clark Carroll, Daniel Jazen, Doris from Regal Park, Frank Menino, Jamie Bussell, Jason Silverin, Jeff Owen, Jermaine Francis, John Prezepelski, John Reppy, Jordan Sassone, Justin Walsh, Kevin Mead, Kush Tastic, Kyle Napolitano, Matt Bader, Matthias Olsen, Michael Marcus, Michael Silvers, Nikolai Hoffman, Panarin 2020, Pratik Landall, Perennial Powerhouse, Sean, Stieg Belbeck, Tall Guy Rob, The Tin Man, Tori from Manhattan, and Trevor Kempner. Thank you again for all your continued support. It means a lot to us. I know a couple of people have asked about off the post and question and answers. You know, logistically, it's been kind of hard for us to record a podcast, let alone two shows a week, but we're going to work on having an element where we're going to, you know, try and have, like, you know, the news and topic segments, and then towards the end of the show, we'll do question and answers. So stay tuned for that. It's something that we're working on to have soon. But, you know, again, thank you for your feedback. And, Mike, as always, I appreciate you. And thanks for doing the show. And I'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Hopefully we get better weather soon. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.